She Did It Her Way podcast, episode 164, launching a successful business on just $400 with Victoria Fantuzzi, co-founder of Labella Figura.
Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, a collective of interviews with top female entrepreneurs from around the globe who have done it their way. These women are disruptors, savvy, courageous, confident, innovative, decisive, unconventional, and humble. Our ladies have proven business models, have taken risks, and have failed only for success to follow. Join us as they share their stories, behaviors, habits, mindset, thought processes, and what it is like to be a woman who means business. And now, here's your host, Amanda Bolin.
Hello, happy Monday, friends. Welcome back for another episode of the podcast. Today, like I said, I am welcoming Victoria Fantuzzi, who is one of the co-founders of Labella Figura, and Victoria and Karen, her business partner. They were actually teachers when they decided to launch this cosmetic skincare line, such as Labella Figura. And it all stemmed from a trip that was taken over in Spain. And this was years ago, before all this organic products, it started to become a thing. People started getting educated. This was before the market had actually even started, I guess you could say, waking up to the products as women, especially that we put on our face, that we use in our household. And they had decided that there was a need for a line that was all natural and organic when it came to skincare. And so they decided to leave their jobs as teachers and launch their product with just $400 and a single ingredient. In this episode, we talk about their marketing strategies, from working with online publications that have a large number of eyes that read the content, to hosting what they call a Night for Green Beauty in New York. That was back in 2012. Again, they've launched several years ago, so this is a really unique, interesting opportunity to speak with Victoria about their business. And also in this episode, we'll talk about how to figure out what business ventures are worthy for your company's time and energy, find ways to grow your business based off customer feedback, learn how to grow with your competitors and have the same values and cross-promote each other as well. So I'm so excited for you guys. I hope you enjoy it, and happy Monday. Also, a quick side note, you guys, I've been testing out emailing sequence and I've realized I'm sending way too many emails. I realized that after the past 2 weeks. So I am only going to send Wednesday's blog post email, and then that will be on Wednesday, obviously, and Friday, which will be the weekly roundup. So those are the only two emails, unless I have some like juicy thing that I need to share with you. If you're on the email list, you're only going to get it Wednesday, and you're going to get it Friday for the weekly roundup. You guys, we are tuning in, but you are tuning in to a conversation with Victoria Fantuzzi, which is such a fun last name. She and her co-founder, Karen King, but Karen is not with us because I just learned that Karen is a night owl, and we are recording this during the day, in the morning. They are the founders of Labella Figura, and I'm just going to turn it straight over to Victoria and have her share with us what it is, and then we're going to talk about their journey and how they started their business and the ups and downs that come along with being an entrepreneur.
Yes, thank you for having me, Amanda.
Yeah,
as you mentioned, Karen is the night owl, so we have opposite schedules. And Labella Figura, this is how you say it in Italian, is a natural skincare line that Karen and I co-founded in 2010 in Chicago. And we make and sell beautiful natural skincare products and perfumes.
So 2010, how did you guys come to the conclusion that you wanted to launch this company?
You know, it was it was pretty much in a state of confusion. We Karen and I met through work. We were both teachers and professionals, and we had some clients that were, we had mutual clients. And to make a very long story short, we had kind of a tragedy with one of our clients, and we sat down one day and we were, you know, discussing this particular child that had so many challenges, and we were, you know, we were so sad about it, and we were so sensitive and emotional as educators. And, you know, I said, you know, what would you do if you could do anything? And, you know, Karen
said, God, love that question.
You know, and she said, you know, I don't know, I kind of would like to do my own thing, start my own business. And I thought about that, and I went home, and I thought, what do I like to do? Karen and I have a lot of mutual interest. I think that's why we kind of connected and bonded. We both have art backgrounds. We love art. We love music. And we love traveling. And every time we would go off and travel, I have this like really great ability to bring back unusual things. And so I went off on a trip, and I went to Spain and found these great beauty products. And then I thought, you know, this reminds me of stuff that my grandmother and my great aunt would do. You know, they were very beautiful women, but very simple. And they kind of made their own stuff. And everything was very natural and organic. And both my grandmother and great aunt were total organic freaks. And not because it was trendy at the time, but that's just the way life was. Mm-hmm. And so I came back and I said, hey, how about we make our own skincare products? And Karen said, are you crazy? Like, what do we know? And I said, exactly, we don't, but we're researchers, we're educators, we're going to learn this stuff.
Oh my gosh.
And sure enough, I mean, I just went full head on and started researching. And then I was shocked. I was really shocked about the beauty industry and cosmetics and what was in my cosmetics and what I had been using for years. And I thought, I can't believe that all of these horrible things are in the products that I put on my skin and body and my hair. I never thought about it, never. And I, you know, shared some of this information with Karen, and we both were like, wow, this is incredible. Does anybody know about this? Who knows about this? So I started talking to my sisters and cousins and friends, and like, do you know what's in your shampoo? Do you know what's in your moisturizer? And you know, when we decided to do this, it was not trendy. It was not cool. You know, it was actually the opposite. You know, people thought, well, these, you know, hippies use natural skincare products, and this is not mainstream, and this is not luxurious. And we knew that we were going to have to educate other women and men about, you know, the beauty industry and what was in their cosmetics and what was good for you and how your skin repairs itself and how your skin is actually your largest organ, and it absorbs, you know, these chemicals very, very quickly. And yeah, so it was a whole process, and it was not easy. It was not easy at all. It was quite challenging, and I guess we were just up for it. So
when you say it was not easy, it was quite challenging, like, put us in a scenario that you wanted to like pull your hair out.
Well, you know, when I would talk to other women about, you know, their skincare and the products that they were using, you know, there just wasn't a correlation with the health of your skin and your body. I think a lot of people correlate, you know, organic foods with how you feel on the inside, but not with how it reflects, you know, the outside of in your appearance. And one of the things that is, it's really ironic and is quite hysterical to me now, was trying to convince women that, you know, oils are actually good for your skin. And they're, for many, many years, and I was, you know, a person that believed this as well, because I just kind of fell into all these myths that were thrown out there by the beauty industry, just like everyone else, that oils are bad for you. Mm. Oils are bad for your skin. But then as I started researching and you did this, you know, I started to learn the breakdown, the chemistry of what is in an oil, what kind of oil, and the difference between a processed oil, a deodorized oil, the difference between a petroleum-based oil and a plant-based oil that is rich in antioxidants and raw and green and nourishing to the skin, how that's absorbed into the skin, what it does to your skin cells. I was like, wow, this is fantastic. I have to tell everybody about this. But there was a very long stretch of time for women to catch on and to understand this. So there were a lot of people trying to break through with the natural beauty industry by educating people why it was better. And a lot of it took a lot of education. It took a lot of like breaking things down as simple as possible. And there's a lot of science behind what we do. And I don't think as women and as consumers that we ever accepted any of that before the natural beauty scene, you know, just kind of flourished. We just listened to the marketing and advertising of what these other conventional brands were telling us, you know, don't use oil. This is oil free. And when you think about it, it's like, how could you have a moisturizer that's oil free? Because
the moisturize.
No, it's an oil and water, and then you need something to emulsify it and combine it. It's kind of like cooking. Like, how do you make a mayonnaise? You know, it's the same type of concept. And we just believed all this stuff for so many years. And so when we started to research and learn, and we were so excited to share, we realized there was this process we were going to go through. We were going to have deniers. We were going to have women say, no, that's not right. Oil is bad for you. And, you know, we started giving away things for free and saying, try this, because you're just not going to believe the results of something like this. It's a single ingredient oil, and it's amazing. It's high in naturally occurring vitamin E. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sure enough, you know, some people tried it and were like, wow. And some people were hesitant, and, you know, the more we went out there and educated people, the more we realized that there was this attraction from women that they wanted to know. They were like, wow, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I want to know more. And kind of would go home and do their homework and come back and say, you know, you're right. I never thought about this, but I started to research and I started to read the boxes and the labels of my beauty products, and I don't understand, you know, half of the
words.
Yeah.
Kind of like food.
Yeah, kind of like food. And, you know, and I was like, yeah, that's a concern. You know, you should know. You should know as a consumer, and this should be transparent. So yeah, those were the challenges in the beginning. It was that type of thing, and we were it was kind of hard because we were like, wow, how do we not sound like complete nerds and explain in simplest way that these products are not doing your body any good, your skin any good, and not overwhelm a consumer with, mm-hmm. you know, scientific knowledge or research material that we had, you know, read. So we wanted to, you know, we wanted to educate, but not overwhelm. And I think at the beginning, it was overwhelming for everyone, including people like us that were, you know, a brand and formulators and the consumer and bloggers and, you know, other. Yeah. So yeah. So
what was it like when you guys decided to, okay, we're going to start this company? I mean, that, and you were teaching and you made that leap. Like, what did the 6 months leading up to when you quit teaching and then the 6 months after look like? Did you guys prep personally? Like, whether it's you saved financially, you gave yourselves a runway, was there any plan that you guys knew that you're going to execute in order to be where you wanted to go?
No.
Sometimes it's just more of like, you just got to do it and then the net will appear. That's what faith is.
Yeah. You know, it's really funny because I am a risk taker. And I think the challenge at the beginning was, how do I do this without risking my entire, you know, career, my former career? Mm-hmm. And to be really honest, I was a little bit embarrassed because I came from like this academic world and I was going into this world that was perceived as kind of superficial by some of my, you know, peers and colleagues. And then someone explained it and said, hey, no, you have a job to do. You're going to educate, you know, people, and they're going to learn the truth of what's really been going on in this beauty industry for a long time. So I took on a different role. But at the beginning, you know, I didn't want to risk too much. So, you know, we took $400, and this is the truth. This is a true story.
Tell us the truth.
We took $400 and I said, we have $400 and this is all the research that, you know, that we've done on ingredients. And we started out with, you know, one ingredient and one product that we wanted to put out on the market. And unfortunately, this ingredient was extremely rare and extremely expensive. And so we bought a little bit of it and we kind of were like, you know, the story of the shoemaker and the elves.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of how I describe LBF, because we had a little bit of money, we had a little bit of product and we put it out there. We had this writer from Refinery 29, somehow she got privy to us and we didn't even have a Facebook page, no social media, nothing. And she kind of got privy to this ingredient and connected it with us. And she did this little write-up on Refinery 29 and we sold some units of our very first product. And we took that money and we put it right back in and we kind of kept building the brand that way, just very slowly and organically, just making money, reinvesting it into the business and making more, you know, shoes. And I'm using that word in quotes, and selling that, very slowly. And in the process, we were learning, we were hearing questions and we were getting feedback and we were taking that and figuring out what we can do better and how we can, you know, incorporate something else, something that maybe, you know, a customer said, oh, I really love this face oil. I'm like, do you have anything for the eyes? And, you know, it was like, you know, cha-ching, idea, you know, okay, now we're hearing what is something women really, really, really think about when it comes to their skincare and their routines. They, you know, focus on their eyes. And we did more research and development and came out with another product for the eyes and sold that. And, you know, it was not fast at all. It was slow and exciting. It was very exciting because we were learning so much. So
what, I know, and I always pull up the website before I get on to interview, and I've looked at your website before and it's beautiful. And like, there's so many things that I'm like, oh, I want that. I want that. I want that. What has been the biggest, like, well, actually I'm going to back up. So when you guys, now that you started in 2010, it's about 7 years in, how do you guys find your sales and like, has that changed? Like, the way that sales came in before versus how they do now, or like where they're coming from, how has the marketing plan changed or maybe not?
So the marketing plan has changed a little bit, and that's another, that's, you know, that's been extremely interesting, you know, thankful for social media and for bloggers and customers. Sales have increased. They increase every year. This industry.
Yay! It's booming, man.
It's booming. It is, you know, by 2018, it's expected to be a $13 billion industry. And it was virtually non-existent in 2010. You know, there were some natural products and a lot of it you could find at Whole Foods or in some of these great, you know, health food stores. We are a kind of a higher end skincare line. So some of our products they're very specific to a certain type of customer. This customer is very, very savvy. They understand ingredients. They do their homework. They want a product that is effective and that offers them results. They are not going to pay the prices that we charge for our products unless they have read that the ingredients, and that's why we're transparent and we list all of our ingredients on our website, and they understand kind of the chemistry behind, you know, each ingredient and the products. And so we are very, I love challenges and I'm very up for the challenges. So we're constantly in research and development mode and out there doing our homework, because it is the most flattering thing in the world to me that we have customers that are so loyal, love our brand, expect the very best from us, and that's our job to put the very best out there for them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how the industry has grown.
I know it's so incredible how the educational aspect and the awareness on how skin is your biggest organ and holistic healing and everything that goes along with just understanding things that go into your body. What would you say is the best business lesson you've learned?
Gosh, there have been so many, but I think the best lesson that I've learned is to say no.
Mm, tell us more.
I wanted, you know, to, I'm such a type person, and I like triple A type person. I just want to do a job and I want to represent my team very well and my brand, and I want to do the best for our customers. But I used to say yes a lot. I used to say yes to things because people would approach us and want to partner with us. And I used to say yes. And how could I make this work? And it became overwhelming. You know, we wear so many hats. I wear so many hats. I know my business from packaging to the lab that we have. I know every single part of it. And I think that's really important. And so it became overwhelming to say yes all the time. And sometimes it didn't make sense, but I wasn't comfortable, you know, saying no. And then there just came this time where all of a sudden we were being approached by, you know, these box companies that were featuring brands in their boxes, and it sounded like a great idea, but it was so huge and we just couldn't do it. And I thought, I'm not going to kill myself trying to produce something that we don't know exactly what's going to happen. We don't know. And even though I feel like I'm a risk taker, I just thought this just doesn't make sense. I've got to do what I know is good for us and our team. And I don't know about that. I hear that, you know, this is trendy, and I'm just going to have to say no this time. And I'm going to watch, I'm going to listen, I'm going to get, you know, feedback from other people and kind of ask questions. And then I just start to be, you know, okay with saying no and feeling okay about that. And it's really funny because sometimes Karen says, you know, she'll approach something or ask me something and she'll say, before you say no, or I know you're going to say no.
You went from like, yes, 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 to no, 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 no.
Yeah. like, I think you're going to say no about this. And we start, you know, conversations like that. And it's kind of funny. So I think saying no is good. And having boundaries is good. Mm-hmm. And we started to do that for ourselves. Like, no, that's, you know, this, we're not, you know, we're, this doesn't make sense for us. We can't partner with you right now. We can't fulfill this huge order. So this, you know, this partnership is not going to work. So you kind of have to get comfortable with the things that you were not comfortable with before. Mm-hmm. And it's one of our hugest lessons is it's okay to say no.
Yeah. No, it's very, very true. And saying no can be, it's almost like a muscle too. Like once you kind of start exercising it, you're like, oh, like I never knew I had this thing. And it's not, I mean, you have to protect your business and figure out what makes the most sense. And it's not against anyone individually or in particular. It's you just utmost is like protecting your energy and time and your business, and it's okay. And like, maybe it's a no is not a no for forever, but it's a no for now. And
sure,
you just have to do what that is. And even like in a, like a social setting, right? Like there's so many things that we could all say yes to. And, that was like something that I've learned over time, that if I, even as an extrovert, can go to like so many different things, and at the end of the week I feel depleted and I didn't create buffers or time to recharge, I like get frustrated with myself. And so I don't, not everyone's always like that or whatnot, but it's like no is okay. It's okay.
Yeah, no is okay. And it's really interesting because you mentioned marketing, and you know, how do you start a company that you want to build and you need customers in order to grow? How do you do that with not very much, you know, resource mm-hmm. or money? And I, you know, there came this time where I realized, wow, here we are, we're talking about this, where we have interested women and, you know, men as well. And they're learning, and they're in this, you know, excited state because they're learning what ingredients are and they're learning what's good for them and they want to know more. How do we share that without hiring this expensive PR, you know, firm, which we did all that stuff. And I thought, well, let's do something different. Let's do something that you know, no one's done before. We are, you know, small brands and we're small businesses. Let's, you know, let's collaborate. Let's cross promote one another. And I remember pitching this idea to other brands because we have a lot of friends in the industry and they have these great brands and they're popular now and they're in stores and in Nordstrom's and Sephora and great. But when we all started out, you know, we were just like, you know, unheard of. Mm-hmm. And I remember pitching this idea to them, like, let's do this event and let's cross promote one another. How do you feel about that? And some people thought, I don't feel comfortable with that because we're competitors. And I thought, well, are we competitors? No, we're in the same boat. We are small brands building businesses. We have a long process and road of educating the consumer. People are saying that we're just a trend. I don't believe in that. And how do we show our customer this is not a trend? We've got a lot of work to do. Like, let's collaborate. And we started this event called A Night for Green Beauty.
Oh.
And yeah, and we decided, let's do this. Let's start in New York because there was a demographic in the country where people were automatically attracted to what we were doing. And that was California, New York. And it was not a hard sell. Chicago was a hard sell.
I wonder why.
You know, and I think the Westerners are just there. You know, we're a
like
certain.
Just getting, I mean, I'm from Iowa. So just imagine we're like 5 years behind everyone else. You're like, I mean, oh, that trend was so trendy 5 years ago. And you're like, wait, what? It's the coolest thing in Iowa right now. Or sometimes things don't even hit Iowa. And I can say that because I'm from Iowa and I love Iowa.
We're, as Midwesterners, we're so stubborn. We're like, we're not about trends. Like, you know, things need to make sense to us. So it takes a while. It takes a while. But so we went to New York and I have these friends and they were fantastic. They worked for free and they promoted the event. They contacted, you know, all these beauty editors and they were in that industry. You know, they were beauty editors for magazines and one was an editor of this great magazine online called Eco Salon, and they connected, you know, all of these people with us, and we contacted the brands and we said, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take a bunch of brands. We're going to find a location. We're going to open it up to the public. We're going to welcome them. We are going to highlight your brand. And we invited, you know, bloggers and editors and the public, and it was a huge success. It was a huge success. And we saw the opportunity and the ability to continue growing our brands with eager customers that wanted to know more. There's just nothing more powerful than being in the process of knowledge, of just soaking it in, wanting more. And we did the exact same event the following year in LA, and that was even bigger.
Wow. Yeah, and LA is all over the like,
it was
good for you.
We had, you know, it was really funny because we, you know, every time we did this event, and it was like another job altogether, you know, we were collaborating with other brands, with retailers, with bloggers. We had a huge charity component to it. We donated over $75,000 in the 3 years that we ran A Night for Green Beauty. Oh, and to great charities. And we asked quite a lot from the other brands. We asked them to donate free products. We asked them to cross promote each other. Was very, very big for me. You know, and we had some people would say, well, you know, I don't feel comfortable because this brand is, you know, my competitor. And I thought, you need to understand that the consumer out there is learning and it's okay. You know, it's okay. There is plenty of room for everybody to grow. Don't mm-hmm. feel nervous about it. And once other founders and brands started to see, like, you know, you're right. There is a lot of opportunity and there's so much interest there, and they felt comfortable. It just was huge. It was like, I don't know, remember that commercial? It was a shampoo commercial. Like, you tell two friends, they tell two friends, they tell
two. Yeah.
That. So it grew like that. It was fantastic. And we did that for 3 years and it was great. It was wonderful. And I think, you know, when Karen and I decided to do this, we thought, you know, this is about the brands and our ability to create brand awareness. This is not about sales. This is not about retailers. This is about other entrepreneurs, other brands having a space to talk about what they do and do that with their direct, you know, consumer. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really big. It was fantastic. It was great. And after 3 years, it was too big for us. And we realized that it just, you know, was another job. We couldn't do it. And I always feel like if I can't do something really, really great, then I'm just not going to do it. So we stopped The Night for Green Beauty. But at that point, like, the natural beauty, market just kind of blew up, and brands don't need an event like that to create brand awareness.
Do people find you guys? Is it, I mean, kind of two questions. The first question is, if you guys do blank activity that is a, you know, that like that will drive sales, like, do you know, or like, what is that activity?
You know, it depends. People find us from all over. I like to say that we're a global brand because I do a lot of research on, like, who is following us and who is buying the product and where are they coming from? How do they hear about us? And I find that we have customers all over the world, and which is fantastic. I have a very open policy, you know, write to me directly. I do our social media. We had PR, you know, handle our social media, and it just was not the same because customers would say, like, well, we want to hear from Victoria. We want to hear from Karen. You know, we had questions for them. And so I took that role back on, and I welcome our customer to write to me directly on social media, ask questions. We are very open and transparent that way. And I find my most favorite way of marketing La Bella Figura is from a customer sharing with another customer. And that happens a lot on social media. That's wonderful, amazing. We feel blessed for social media because there's no better advocate for your brand than a very happy customer. And she's sharing it with her friends and on social media, and that's fantastic. So people find us. Sometimes I'm amazed, you know, when I hear, you know, I live in Sri Lanka and I heard about your eye serum, you know,
and
I
want to, yes,
fantastic, great. How can I help you? Yeah, it's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I have a couple last questions for you. What is the one thing that still keeps you up at night? If anything still keeps you up at night?
You know, yes. to answer your question, yes, a lot of things keep me up at night. I am very creative, and I find myself thinking of the next thing. One of the things about that I've learned a lot about myself, actually, being an entrepreneur, and I've learned about myself is that I'm very creative and I'm always moving ahead. So, you know, we're about to launch some luxury candles, and this is kind of new to us. And it's really, really cool because, you know, it's part of the beauty experience that we don't really think about, you know, the olfactive part, you know, why people like candles and when you're setting a mood and how that affects you and how it makes you feel. So we're launching these beautiful candles, and it's all new to our customer, and they're asking, like, wow, what is this like? And how are you bringing this into your skincare line? And what does it mean? And we're explaining this correlation between the way you feel and how you exude that out into the world. Yet I'm already moved on, you know? So for me, I hate to use the word balance, because the honest to goodness truth is that there is no balance when you're an entrepreneur. You're just kind of juggling what's more important, like priorities.
Yeah, you got to find the zen in the chaos.
I had a hard time because I really believed in that myth of, like, you know, you got to find balance and, you know, bring balance into your life. I threw that out the window because there was no balance. Just what's the most important thing that I need to do today? But what keeps me up at night is just, you know, I've moved on. And how to bring that whatever thoughts or ideas into what we'll be doing next, and does it make sense, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I going back to the balance. I was at an event last October, and the speaker, Steve McClatchy, he spoke about balance, and I thought the way that he had positioned it made a lot of sense, where he's like, same thing like you're saying, like, balance doesn't really exist. However, when he felt most balanced would be when he would pull two all-nighters to write three chapters in his book, and he felt as if he really moved forward what he wanted to get done. And he was like, after those three all-nighters, and even though I had a Red Bull and I was like, you know, to everyone else, I looked like I was out of balance. He's like, I never felt more imbalanced because I was able to achieve these things that I wanted to get done that then allowed me to breathe for a little bit. And it's like running sprints and figuring out, okay, when are you going to run, take a break, run, or like just decide to do a sprints inside of a marathon type of pace. But that was, yeah, I agree. I think balance is like, you have to get in the right alignment, but then from there, it's just, how do you manage the things that you need to get done in a manner in which sets you up for success, because everyone's different. So,
yeah. And, yeah. I like to tell other women, you know, that they'll ask, or other, you know, entrepreneurs will ask, you know, how do you do it? How do you handle it? You know, there's no real answer. And I think I quickly learned that it's okay that, you know, that it's okay that you juggle so many things, because you are kind of like, you know, you're the mom to your business. And just like a mom in real life, you're juggling a whole bunch of things, you know, a job, kids, and schedules and all of that stuff. And it's okay. Just, you know, breathe and figure out today what's on my plate, what is the most important thing. I'm going to tackle that. I might have to push this, you know, to the side for now. I'll get back to that tomorrow. And it's okay. Just that whole balance myth of, like, you know, you need to be zen with your business and, you know, you can have it all. I just really don't believe in that. I don't like to tell other women that that's how it's supposed to be. It's however you feel comfortable managing. And we all have different ways of doing that. So,
amen, sister. I love it. Last question I have for you, and I ask this on, I think, almost every podcast. Maybe there's a few that I've forgotten because I just got so excited. But what's been like one of your favorite books that's helped you and changed your perspective or impacted your business?
Wow. I am going to go back to a classic. Huckleberry, The Adventures of I think of that book quite a lot. There's so many lessons to learn in that book. And I kind of feel a little bit like Huckleberry myself. I mean, sometimes I feel very uncouth, you know. I'm like, what am I doing? I don't know. And then I've always had this, and I attribute this to my grandmother, who was an amazing tiny little lady who just thought so highly of me. And sometimes I think I can do anything, you know, and it's crazy. It's a crazy thought. But the fun part of having that thought is actually trying to do these crazy things that you think you can do. And I think Huckleberry was just this great example of this person that had this, like, this fight in him, and he knew the difference between right and wrong, and he was doing something that he felt was right, but that he would pay the price for, you know. Mm. And if you remember the story, you know, of how he was, you know, helping this slave to flee and find freedom, and how he felt that, you know, this was the right thing to do, but at the same time, he was going to go to hell for it. And I feel that with my business and in general in life, like, you're always having this battle inside of you, and sometimes you make right decisions, sometimes you make wrong decisions, sometimes you make decisions that you think were right and they end up being wrong, and, you know, and you're frustrated and you think, wow, I shouldn't have done that. So I think of that book a lot, and I think it's incredible that a book like that is so inspirational for me, and that I try really, really hard to always do the right thing, and sometimes it's not, but I try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been a long time since I've read that book, but knowing the story of it and just how it can inspire someone, like it has for you, you know.
Yeah.
That's awesome. No, this has been amazing. And I am so excited for you guys. And I love, I love interviewing all different, like, women in their entrepreneurial journey, whether it's in tech or it's solopreneur, or for you guys at this stage of the game, like, you've launched your company almost 7 years now. So it's cool to be able to sit down and say, like, what have you learned as an entrepreneur over those times? So I, Victoria, really appreciate it. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I really had a lot of fun.
Thanks for tuning in to the She Did It Her Way podcast. Did you like this episode? head on over to iTunes.com to leave us a rating and a review. We would love to hear from you. And don't forget to check out SheDidItHerWayPodcast.com, where you can subscribe to our email list so you can receive the inside scoop on our latest episode released each Monday. Now, do us a favor and go make it a great week.